evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KTBAR, W2TTT. And my favorite response to that query is no response. And I got it that way. That's a good thing. Alrighty. Well, good evening, everyone. This net meets weekly from the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club 2-meter repeater, 146.955. The repeater is in Alpine, New Jersey. It uses a PL of 141.3 and a negative 600 kilohertz offset to access the repeater. This net is also available via Echolink, via K2 Foxtrot Juliet, K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L for link, and you're welcome to access the net via that way as well. In any case, let us begin with the check-in. Well, let me describe the net first before we check in. So the purpose of this net is to have a conversation about amateur radio, computers, telecommunications, electronics, electricity, things in our society. Use all that good stuff, which is virtually anything. So you can pretty much talk about anything you want if you tie it back to one of the usual suspect subjects. Our net typically, has conversation about all sorts of wonderful things. And we do like building things. We like projects. We like simple projects. We like to understand questions, that have always puzzled us and, quote, we never had the opportunity. We were afraid to ask. Never be afraid to ask a question on this net. There is no such thing as a, quote, dumb question. In fact, we would like you to participate even if you don't have a topic you want to bring up or even if you don't have a question. So why is that? Because your presence will tell us how we need to calibrate the answers, and you might become a resource in answering a question that you wouldn't think you could answer or be a party to that conversation. So we hope you will participate. So with that in mind, let's see who's around. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter alpha, please call K2BARW2TTT with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. That was underwhelming. Let's go to the kilos. We haven't done that in a while. The kilo twos first, please.
K2BAR, this is K2ZO with a comment.
Excellent, Jim. K2ZO, good evening, Jim. Anybody else with Kilo 2 call? Alrighty. How about the rest of the Kilos?
K2BAR, this is K2AMI. No questions or comments at this time.
Even Tony, any other Kilo 2s? Ready, Kilos.
KO2, okay. Hi, Gordon. No questions or comments at this time.
Evening, Bennett. Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos? All right.
Connected. KD2AKP.
Sorry, I doubled. KD2AKP. Welcome aboard. How are you this fine evening? Did you have a question or a comment?
Good evening, Gordon. No, I do not have any questions or comments yet. So, thank you.
Welcome aboard. Very, very good. Greetings from Calexico. I think you are. That's where you were last week. All right. Any other stations on Echolink while we're there? Alrighty. Let's go to W2s.
Uh,
W2JEK. No comments or questions.
Good evening, Don. Got you, W2JEK, K2BAR, W2TTT. Who was the other station?
WE2R, no questions or comments, and it's Charlie.
And Charlie, welcome aboard. Any other Whiskey 2s, or any other Whiskeys, I should say?
W1AU, Bill, none of the above.
Good to hear you as well. Any other Whiskeys? Whiskey one more time. Your signal was very marginal. Boy, I'm not. I got the no questions, no comment. I didn't get the call sign. Call sign, just one more time, please. Okay. I think that was W2LCN. I think that was Rick. All right, very good. You're really spotty tonight. I don't know what's going on. Maybe your antenna got wet or something. Okay, very good. All righty. Any other whiskeys? All right, let's go to the Novembers.
K2BAR. K2RBJ with a comment.
Welcome aboard with a comment. Good. Two comments. And they're both from Jim. Actually, technically, we have three comments because I'm a Jim as well, but no one calls me Jim. And I have a comment. Okay, very good. Any other Novembers?
K2 Beer. And 2AO. Two questions.
Excellent. Noel, good evening to you, sir. Alrighty. Any other Novembers?
KD2AKP disconnected.
Wow. Okay, he might be back. All right. Any other stations wishing to check in any call sign?
Kilo Charlie 2, Oscar Romeo X-ray.
Evening, Robert. Welcome aboard. Any comments or questions?
Yeah, just one comment. When you do the roll call, start with mobile units first.
I guess we could do that after we do the emergency traffic. All right, very good. Do that. Any other stations?
WB2UOD, the handle here is George, no comment.
B2UOD, good evening, George. Where are you from, George?
Norwood, New Jersey.
Welcome.
Connected. KD2AKP.
For planning a winter event, it's highly, highly dependent on EMS support because of the intense temperature issues that we have to encounter. In January, we do an outdoor event on a large scale. So, welcome to the net. Any other stations?
KD2AIK with the question, as usual.
Excellent. KD2AIK. No, actually, the one who says, as usual, or should say it, is into what we all. But neither here nor there, we like people with questions and comments. We like people without them, too, but it's easier to generate a conversation if we have a topic or two or ten. So, welcome aboard. Alrighty. Any other stations?
Hey, it's BAR from Casey Torres. I'm going to clear with you, Gordon. I'm home. I'm going to clear with you. Have a good evening.
Okay, Robert, we acknowledge that. This is N2SWI, taking over briefly. I've been told to start with the questions. So, N2AEL, this is K2BAR N2SWI. Go with your question.
Okay, this is an interesting
one. Only slightly involved with ham radio. I have a four-wheel electric scooter. The scooter uses two big 33-amp-hour batteries. One of my friends put it away for me, and they must have hit one of the lights. And when I went to get it a few months later, one battery voltage was about 1.25 volts. The other one was 2. Anyway, couldn't bring those batteries back. So the one thing I did was go to Harbor Freight, and for $8, this big 400-amp battery disconnect switch, which might be useful since it's got humongous contacts, and it's really quite foolproof if any ham radio operator was going to use the switch to disconnect the batteries for his station, because it's probably rated around 400 amps and pretty much can handle anything we throw at it. I also ordered two 50-amp-hour Gelso batteries. The company waited a week and a half and then informed me that they don't carry that size anymore. I had ordered 50-amp batteries, so I need 50% more power. So my question for today is, any suggestions where I could get either a deep cycle, marine, or RV-type battery, or gel cells in a location within, 10 or 15 miles of Hackensack? That's the first question.
Okay, very good. I do not know. I do not have an answer for that. Anybody out there have an answer for Noel?
W1AU.
Charlie, I think I heard you in there. Go ahead, Charlie.
Okay, this is WE2R. There's a marine supply store on Route 17 in Lodi where you can get deep cycle marine batteries. Just south of Essex Street, southbound West Marine. Back to Nick.
And the other station, I know I should know your name, and I don't.
No problem. W1AU. You can get them on the internet pretty easy, and they'll ship them off to you, all standard sizes. Battery Junction is one of the places that I've dealt with.
Is that within 10 or 15 miles of me?
Well, it's an internet supplier. If you want one that's nearby, I think there's Batteries Plus in Wayne.
Well, basically, I got to get it by Sunday.
Picky, picky.
Anyway, you could hook up your generator to the scooter.
What to me is if making strides against breast cancer walk in New York City, I don't think that would be approved by the powers that be. Great store to south, 217 South, just below Essex Street. There's Essex Street, there's the Armory, then there's 80. Crossing over 17. Then there's a Detroit Diesel place. We call it Bruce DM Diesel. It's got a different name. And there's also the Passport. Is it right in there?
This is WE2R. Do I have it? Yeah, I guess so. Yes, it's southbound. You go past the Armory. Let's say you were coming from Route 4 area. Under, I think it goes under Essex Street, or maybe it's Route 80. Anyway, it's just past an overpass, and it's on your right. It's not that easy to find, but it's West Marine, and I think it's well before the path mark. Over.
It's just as you pass under Route 80. Just as you're under it, look to your right. That entrance is right there.
Is it where the Lodi inspection station is?
Less than a click past it.
Okay, I'll find it tomorrow after coffee. And I'm bringing toys to coffee.
Well, crank up your audio.
Okay, I'll go there after coffee tomorrow.
Alrighty, guys, W2TTT. So where are we? I apologize. One of my scouting friends lost his wife this week, and a call came in over that point. And then my scout committee chair and her younger son were just rolled up next to us. It's like, geez. Anyway, by the way, the kid brother of KC2YER, you can look him up. Anyway, so where are we in this chaos, and I apologize.
And 2 Noel just had the first question answered.
Okay. Second question, Mr. Noel.
Okay. I have, when I'm going to go to Portable Day, a single call, which has got a substantial base, but the top 20 feet is that plastic tubing. And I'm thinking that perhaps when I put an antenna up there, instead of attaching the antenna and then trying to lift the pole up, just put a light pulley with a light piece of rope coming down, and after everything is up and stable, I should haul the antenna up, sort of like hauling the flag up. Is that practical? Have other people done that in the past?
If you put a pulley at the top, why not? It's absolutely for practical. Lots of people do that kind of stuff. Mr. Don.
I just got QST today, and what they did is they were showing how one guy put the top of a pole like that, a guise for a fixture for guying, and he put he got a piece of some kind of a PVC coupling that it's tubular, but there's a ridge in the inside of it so that the two pieces of pipe would not actually touch each other if you were joining two pieces of PVC pipe. And he's got this that fits on just on top of the pole that you're using for the antenna support. And then he clamps on with a radiator type hose clamp. Three of those, I think they call them carabiners or something like that, clips that holds them in place for the guy wires. So that might be of interest to you, Noel. I don't know if you've gotten your QST yet or not, but it might be interesting for you. Back to that, WJK.
That's right, called carabiners, by the way. Don, next time we cross paths, ask me for my keys. I will show you what a real carabiner looks like, i.e. one that you climb on, not what they call a keybeaner, which is something that's good enough for holding something lightweight like your keys or something like that. Anyway, it's all good. Noel, did anybody else want to make any comment? All right, Mr. Noel, back to you then.
Thank you. I actually wasn't going to use any guy wires. I just briefly looked at the UST, and I think I can see you both at the same time. I was busy looking at this brass ball that's used in a toilet tank that somebody decided to put it to make a great top to an antenna as part of his catering. And of course, nowadays they're all plastic, so I have no idea where he got that brass one. Back to that, KGBR and 2OL.
You buy it in a traditional hardware store or plumbing store, or the scrapyard, or a junk dealer. My guess is that you replace the mechanism out of the back of a toilet tank, and that's what came out, and you probably replaced it with a piece of plastic, but if you had this thing, he wanted to repurpose it.
No, he specially went out and bought it, and it's bright and shiny copper, just like the day they made it. That's William.
Comment, go ahead.
W2JK. Yeah, I read the article, Noel, and he had to go looking for it. He found one in one of the older plumbing supply places that still had a couple of those actual copper ones. Most of the big-time box stores have just the plastic ones. Let's start with the article about the antenna support for the military masters on page 68. This is on the November QST. Back to net, W2JK.
Anybody else? Okay, Mr. Noel.
Okay, last question. If one was making a power junction like Barry uses at his field day events in the 73, I'm sorry, not the VHF contest, what would, and if a person wanted to put a 30-amp circuit breaker and a couple 20s in it and a couple different outlets, what would be a good configuration that would have a reasonable chance of being sturdy to be bounced around rather than the big wooden things that Vera has, and would be relatively resistant to water, relatively waterproof?
I know. Can they make outdoor utility boxes?
Yeah.
In NEMA sizes, and you can put your mount yourself inside and then close over the lid. It works real well. Now you put that breaker box into a larger NEMA enclosure and bring in the cables into outlets that you can also put in the larger enclosure. And that way you can plug them into plugs that still have it under weather cover, but have there'll be slots in the bottom to accommodate the cables and allow the door to close over top.
Yeah. What happened is you cannot buy a companion generator in this country right now for the EU 2000 for love nor money. It seems that the tsunami has pretty much wiped out the pipeline, and you can still get a few of the EU 2000. So I gave up on my companion, decided that what I should do is just buy another set of the cords, run the cords to some sort of box, put in two 20-amp conventional outlets that are going to be water-resistant in some way, legal for outside use, and have 20-amp GFI circuit breakers, and one 30-amp GFI circuit breaker going out to a 30-amp twist outlet and a 30-amp RV female outlet, and put it all together. That's what my idea is. And then this way, when I start up the generators, I just plug in those the cords that are made specifically for the generator and take everything off this box where I'll have the GFI circuit breakers, so everything is safe and legal. Enjoy them.
Yeah, well, what I would recommend is your input to that box at the end of the cord should be whatever's on the end of that mating cord. Is it like a 30 or 40 amp Hubble connector? What is it?
Okay, I thought about that, and I went and looked them up. The best price for this stupid little outlet, socket is what they call it. The stupid little socket is $20 a piece for four of them, plus about $50 shipping. So it's just about $100 for four sockets. And I'm still not even sure that they'll fit, because it doesn't seem to be an easy part to find. So I said to myself, about $100 for these four sockets. It's ridiculous. I'll just hook the cords up. The cords have the ends that are shockproof. So even if you only use one, the the other end cords are completely shielded as part of the design, so you're not going to electrofry yourself. Thanks for that, Andrew William.
Well, that's nice. So, I'm trying to understand why you need four of them.
Each cord set has four plugs on it. Two for one generator, two for the other generator. The conventional one that Honda makes has two cord sets coming out. Each cord set has a red and a green. Green goes to the left, red goes to the right on each generator. So that's a total of four. Now, if I was just going to use the generator by itself, when I use it by itself, just leave it naked the way it is, when I wanted to use it for drawing a heavy load, that would be the two generators combined, you can't really just plug it into one of those 20-amp outlets because that's a 20-amp circuit breaker on the Honda. What you have to do is bring them out some way. So what Honda does, of course, is use these special cords that are used to tie the two generators together to come out to, in effect, what you've just described, some sort of humongous attached to one of the generator configurations that cost $249. And I said, that's kind of ridiculous because it really is huge, it's unwieldy, it makes the generator hard to move, carry, everything, and you're gonna knock it into something. So I said to myself, well, put it in a box, put four of those sockets in, get two cords, plug them in, bingo, I'm up and ready to go. Until I found out the price of the sockets. And you need two for one generator, two for the other generator. So my next choice is to simply buy the whole cord set for $35. Take one cord set, cut the ends of off. Now I have approximately 4 foot, and each cord set will be 4 foot. Wire it into the box or whatever you're suggesting, and away I go. And it's as I said, the ends of these cord sets have that rubber sleeve and a plastic thing. So when it's not plugged in, all you can see is the rubber sleeve and the plastic end. No metal, it's safe for the average normal idiot not to shock themselves or their children.
Okay, let's try this again. We need to know only what you're going to use, not what you're not going to use, because we went through two different machinations and something about cutting a cord at the end, and I was never sure whether we were cutting the cord you wanted to use, which is not Honda's, or the cord you didn't want to use, which is Honda's. So why don't we treat this as a linear function and only describe the parts we're going to use and how we're going to use them. Over.
Okay, I got four wires coming into this box. One set from one generator, one set from the other generator.
Okay. Those cords are female types that plug into your box, right? So that way, as you said, that if they're left unplugged in, they don't offer a direct hazard, right?
Yes, I'm going to direct wire them to the box, and the other end with the safety connectors will be for the generator.
Okay, and those are the, and they're being plugged into a Hubble connector, or are they plugged into a standard 110 connector?
Don't know. That's the question. In other words, I know which end goes to the generators. Now I got to do the other end with the circuit breakers and the some sort of safe outlet configuration.
Okay, so the cables you're going to buy are going to be hardwired into your funky merging box, and they will go to one or both generators. The outlets on the other side can be whatever you want. That's the good news, because you've hardwired the cable feeding that box, if you will, the supply side. So you would put breakers in there. I'd put a main first, and then I would break it out either on the same side or split side, 110 outlets, or 220 if you want to go across the two,
and put those through appropriate, you know, circuit per circuit breakers, and make sure that if you're wiring something for 220 that, you know, both legs are appropriately handled with interlocking breakers so that both sides trip together. If one side is unhappy, both sides go. Nothing's worse than having a 220 breaker leave you with 110 live on one leg and nothing on the other. All sorts of bad things can happen to you and or equipment. So, okay, that's fine. So, you can put anything you want in the way of outlets on that box to plug into your, shall we say, devices.
Good idea. I see one with a quick...
Right. So, Noel, what you can do is you can put, you know, a standard breaker box, a small one, inside of a larger NEMA enclosure, like a big waterproof NEMA enclosure, that has regular outlets underneath, and just feed the cords in through slots in the bottom that, you know, the lid closes over, so that way only cables come through the bottom. And they'll plug into individual circuit outlets that are inside the outer box, if you will.
Noel, somebody makes this. I see them sell it on eBay. It's if you don't have a companion and you got two 2000s and you just plug them together and it's got a box.
Yeah, $249.
Well, this is what you're going to spend by the time you finish with a bunch of NEMA boxes, breakers, and fittings.
But I object to the one that Honda makes because you fasten it in order to, it'll fall over unless you mount it correctly on one of the generators. Bolt it on.
I mean, I got that. So you're going to have your own box that's going to be not bolted to a generator and not like the big signboard, sandwich board kinds of things that Barra has, something in between.
Yeah, I'm looking through the NEMA boxes now.
Yeah, and they make outdoor ones, too, and that's the whole point. So, you know, both the inside and the outside should be outdoor boxes, in my own personal opinion, but if you can keep direct rain off of it, I suppose you could use an indoor box as the inner one and an outdoor box on the outer one, but given how things get repurposed in your life, I would build for robustness. Anybody else have any comments on this one?
K2ZO.
Jim, go right ahead.
Okay. As someone who has lived with NEMA all my life, NEMA 3 is water resistant. You know, rain can fall on it. NEMA 13 is waterproof. So just to give you an idea, heads up on that. Well, as far as what your ratings and what you're looking for.
NEMA 3, since I don't intend to have it in a running stream.
And it'll cost you a lot less.
Thank you for the nomenclature. That was what was killing me as I'm rolling along here. Anybody else? Just out of curiosity, could you just refresh our memories as to what the functionality differences are on the EU 2000 companion versus the EU 2000?
I'll be happy to do that.
Go right ahead.
The EU 2000 costs $900, has 1600 watts continuous and 2000 peak. You can put two of them together. The only difference with the companion is, in addition to having one pair of 20 amp outlets, you have an additional outlet that's the three-prong twist lock conventional. for a 30 amp power cord, and that's got a 30 amp breaker in it. So it's $100 more. It's the easy way to do it because my intention was to buy the companion, the $35 cable that hooks the two generators together, and so I'd have one regular, one companion. When I wanted to hook my motorhome up, there's a little adapter that switches from the three-prong 30 amp to what's called an RV 30 amp. And I was using it, I don't know if you saw it, with the 3K generator that I was using. And you can't get a companion for love or money. Next in that, Antonio.
Okay, so they just don't sell it is the problem. Even though it's identified in their product line, they're all just sucked up. Now, can you run the companion standalone as well as the regular generator standalone?
Yes, they're both plain old EU2000. The only difference is the front panel and the circuit breaker, and $100 difference. So it was worth it. You could actually take two companions and hook them up the same as you would to EU2000. But the tsunami and the supply, the items that goes into building the generators, and the suppliers that build various parts have been way behind. You can't get one. Even though it's carried and it's normally sold, it's just not available at this time.
Gotcha. Okay. So is there also a shortage of EU2000s? Or are they just saying, we're just not going to make companions, we're just going to keep it simple and just make the one model for now?
No, they're making you use 2000 and the companion. It's just that there evidently was a lot more in the supply line of the EU2000. I just bought the second one. And Jim Joyce got one, and I think Don has one, and I know Jim Jackson has one. So we got a lot of them in the club. What I'd like to do is, as I said, when I want to use my RV, I'd like to have a simple way to hook it up, and I'd like to run it through a GFI circuit breaker to at least give a nod towards the code and everything being safe.
GFI's not going to work.
Go ahead, Jim. Explain why.
The thing doesn't have a ground. How's it going to work? Our GFI on our big Barrett generator didn't work. I had to disconnect it.
Well, supposedly, we have ground terminals on these generators, and when we're out camping, we're supposed to drive a 4-foot ground rod into the ground.
Okay. Did you check and see if the terminal goes to ground on the neutral? Guess what? It doesn't.
It does not. The neutral floats from the ground.
And then it's not going to work.
The ground terminal on the three-prong plug goes to ground, but the neutral doesn't. Take a look at the schematic and then check it with your ohmmeter.
Don't have to. That's one of the big problems when using the EU2000 on the newer boats. The intelligent battery chargers and power stations on the boats take one look at the output from the EU2000 and scream tilt and shut down. And the person who wrote the first article in the series got out a paperclip and shorted to the neutral the ground on one of the unused outlets, and that's how he got the thing to work.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions on this topic? I think that was the right answer. Alrighty. And James is not home. That's interesting. Anyway, so I am going to back into the driveway so that I don't have to move my car in the morning. Yay. Okay. Anyway, enough of that. Well, that was informative. So thank you for clarifying that, both Jim and Noel.
Yeah, that's okay.
The original you know, the grandpa owner of EU-2000s in this group.
As well as the oldest Jim. Well, second oldest Jim.
I'm good with that. I can be the youngest Jim for as long as you guys will have me. Actually, as long as you guys hang around. Go ahead, Mr. NS2K. Commentary?
Oh, well, no, I'm gonna stay out of this pissing match here. But anyway, keep in mind what the GFI does is it merely looks for an imbalance in the neutral and the hot current. Any current going in any other direction will cause the GFI to fault.
So you don't need the ground?
If I were going to be snarky, I'd say there's no such thing as ground.
Okay. The terminal labeled ground should or should not be bonded to the frame of the generator.
Whatever they did from the factory.
Okie dokie. So, let's... How is that different and yet effective, or is it, question mark, from the Honda factory now that they've lifted certain things, and versus the Barrett big behemoth generator, which Jim disconnected. I forget what you said you disconnected, Jim. So, K2ZO, why don't you clarify this? K2BARW2TTT.
Okay, that's K2ZO. Now, the unit that we had there kept tripping with our distribution boxes. Of course, I have no idea how well they were wired. All had questions about that. But as an expedient, what I did was, since we did have GFIs up on the units themselves, I disconnected the main GFI, and all I did was take a look at the schematic and realize that there was a toroid, a donut, that sensed the imbalance in the current, as Jim says, and I merely unplugged it from the circuit. So the circuit is going along fat, dumb, and happy, thinking that everything is fine. And that's the way I disabled the GFI on that generator.
Yep. Okay. Follow up, anybody?
Suggestion.
Mr. Jackson.
We should look to see if it's still disconnected. One of the things I found on the generator is someone had hooked up the, on the 220 output, hot ground instead of hot neutral, and the GFI was really not pleased about that.
Jim, if we put some effort into it, I'm sure we could get it to work correctly.
Well, except that got changed, so it stopped tripping.
I'm talking about the GFI on the main generator. This was an expedient in the middle of the contest, if you remember, when I did that.
Yeah, check it to see if it's still like that. I'm not confident that it is.
KD2AKP disconnected.
So, that's an interesting dichotomy. Hot ground instead of hot ground neutral. Yeah. I can see some issues with that.
Yeah, the ground is connected up as if it were a current carrying conductor. A cord up to the panel. Well, you absolutely can't do that.
This is why, for short things, I like DC. I can live with high voltage DC, but boy, some level, I wonder. But anyway, enough of that. Let's see. Anybody else on the topic? Okay, I have to ask this. Any horror stories related to this kind of thing? anyone here has a horror story related to miswired power, really?
Oh, of course we do.
Yeah, come on. I mean, guys, understand something. Part of this net is a little like watching Mythbusters. You ask a question, we work through it, we get you an answer that you can actually use that will keep you alive. Then we point out some things that are, shall we say, things you don't want to have happen ever, ever again, and how that can come about, intentionally or otherwise.
You want one horror story or two?
They're reasonably brief. We can take two.
Well, one of them I don't actually have the resolution, but I know it's wrong. But in the other case, we did find the solution. I'm trying to take dinner in, and it's slippery. Hang on. There we go. We're in. The problem, I noticed I went to visit my folks who were staying in a campground up in Maine years and years and years ago when we still had a standard poodle, great huge white standard poodle, mostly white, little apricot. Anyway, I thought it was very strange that he was jumping from the ground up into the motorhome instead of walking up the steps as he normally did, being an older dog. And so I finally got my multimeter out, and well, actually the first thing I did is I rubbed the back of my finger against the chassis of the motorhome, and how should I say it, the hairs were standing rather upright. They were telling me something. So I got out the meter, and sure enough, the chassis of the trailer was at 120 volts. As it turned out, it was a brand new section of the campground. They had miswired the outlet. Anyway, we got them in the next morning, and they fixed that problem. But it was kind of interesting in the meantime. Hope they didn't do any more like that. The other horror story, hang on, MS2K, is something that still exists at a certain place of work, where there is a lovely three-phase transformer that feeds a big chunk of the building, a technical part of the building, and there is a massive magnetic field radiating from this thing, which tells me there is no way on the face of the earth that this thing is not wired incorrectly. The net radiation from the transformer should be darn close to zero.
So did you feel like you were like you didn't want any kind of ferrous material on your person for fear that you were going to get sucked into some piece of machinery?
No, well, it was just causing a very large field, and it was causing interference with both equipment and people. It was directly below the maintenance shop. They ended up lining that part of the shop with Mu metal. I couldn't believe they actually went out and bought a bunch of Mu metal and lined the thing. And instead of fixing the wiring problem, anyway, I'm somewhat astounded by that whole thing, because you know that it has to be miswired or defective. I know they tried to, they had the electricians look at it, no one came to any satisfactory solution, so they left it the way it was. They lined the room above it with Mu metal. Couldn't believe it.
That is kind of excessive, isn't it? Oh, man. Well, good, I guess. Wow. Alrighty. Anybody else? All right.
Thank you, Jim. That was
very entertaining on both scores. Alrighty, have we beaten this dog? I mean, does everybody feel like Michael Vick at this point? Ouch, yeah, I know, that was pretty harsh. Sorry. Anyway, alright, Mr. Noel, you got your question answered. Jim, you got your topic raised, I think. No, you haven't done yours yet, my God. Okie doke. Go right ahead. Let's see. K2ZO. K2BAR.
Okay. K2BAR. K2ZO. Now, the comment that I wanted to make was on the antenna that I had sent you. You were looking for a cheap and easy 6-meter antenna that could be used out in the field. And I sent you that antenna. Did you take a look at that email I sent to you?
Yeah, I did. The only thing that put me off on it was having to build my own 3-inch separated, you know, ladder line. And I think the use of 450 ohm window line is probably what you had in mind as an alternative, yes?
Okay. Well, if you take a look at some of the other designs where people have matched using both, usually it takes a shorter amount of the other smaller spaced line. Now, I don't know why they picked that particular spacing. There's no reason for it, because this is an extended double ZEP, and we have built them for 80 meters and for 40 meters, which we use on field day, using 450 ohm line. You just have to go down a number of degrees to get it the right match. If you look at that antenna, and there may be somebody that may want a copy of that, so you might want to send it off to them, Gordon. We should easily be able to do that with a slightly less length. Instead of the 31.5 inches, space 3 inches, we should be able to do that with a slightly shorter length, which I haven't really calculated out, but I'd probably do it empirically anyway with the meter. But no, I would not build that antenna with that particular spacing. I would build it with a 450 ohm line and experiment with it, which should not take long to figure it out.
Yeah, the other comment you put in here, which puzzled me a little bit, was use of 450 ohm twin lead, addition of a reflector. So I guess those are two different things. So tell us about the addition of the reflector.
Okay. If you remember our discussions about a year ago on here, I was talking about an extended double ZEP. Now, each leg of the extended double ZEP is longer than a half wavelength by a certain amount, about an eighth of a wavelength. And I said, gee, it'd be a nice idea if you put a reflector on this thing. And Don, W2JEK, said, hey, it's been done, and came up with a article from an old QSC where it had been done in the 30s. And my comment was that, gee whiz, this would be a great idea. Well, on 6 meters, it would be very easy to implement, spacing the wire about 1.2 wavelengths behind and going from the end of the antenna back towards the center with a big insulator spacer piece of tubing or rope or something, and putting two reflectors each on either side that were a half wavelength long would make this thing into a very effective beam. And you could probably configure it in a square configuration and hang it up just with some fiberglass tubing spacers for the 0.12 wavelength. No one's looking at the pictures, so they don't know what we're talking about here, but I think you could make a very easy throw up wire beam with this.
Okay, just to recap, you've got a dipole-like structure. In this case, it's an extended double zap. And 0.2 wavelengths, 0.25 wavelengths, whatever, you know, kind of pattern cleanliness you're looking for, behind it, you're putting another wire. How long is that wire?
Well, it's going to be a half wavelength.
Single half wavelength behind each side or behind the whole mess?
Well, it's each side of the antenna on an extended double zap is more than a half a wavelength. But the area that you need to reinforce with the reflector is from the end of the antenna towards the center. So what you would need would be a piece of insulator in between that. Could be just a piece of wire. So you would have two pieces of wire extending from the end towards the center, a half wavelength, and then on either side, and then, of course, a piece of rope in between them to separate them. So you'd have two separate half wavelengths, and they would be behind the thing reinforcing the signal. No, in the direction you want it.
I get it. My only question is, Jim, why would it not be 5% longer than the driven element it's providing the reflection, you know, capability for? It's just a little counterintuitive.
Well, of course it would be. I just assumed you knew that.
Well, yeah. It is. So, I'm just trying to think electrically what's really going on there. I mean, you certainly put a half wave behind it, but... And that will provide a reflector. You know, at some point, I'm just going to have to take EasyNeck and actually model this sucker.
Probably be a good idea, but it's been done for HF, and I see no reason why it won't work here on 6 meters.
I think you're right. This is pretty cool. Well, given the notion of ladder line, we're going to see if we have time to throw one of these things together tomorrow morning. Your note today kind of said, well, I could do this with ladder line. I have that. So... We'll see. God knows I have RGE58 with at least one connector that's butchered off, so that's even better. So we put those pieces of coax to use and make them fairly soldered feeds, as is described. If anyone wants the design for this antenna that we're talking about, with the assumption that you replace the ladder line section they represent, or that's homebrew, with, let's say, 450 ohm window line or something like that, feel free to shoot me an email and I'll be happy to respond with the content of Jim's reference. So, I was actually musing a little bit more on this point and trying to determine how to make a really, really cool version of this out of PVC and the like. And what I came up with, if I wanted to build something that would be rigid and be able to do this, I was thinking of taking oversized pieces of T, with preferably threaded T in PVC, scaling it down to, you know, have a small adapter, let's say a 3/4 inch or 1 inch adapter to a 1/2 inch, you know, basically take a copper 1 inch to 1/2 inch adapter, so thread it on the male side at 1 inch and sweat at 1/2 inch, maybe 3/4, but 1/2 inch is probably fine. On the tubing side, and thread a piece of tubing onto that, screw that in, and then with a